Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's Ecologic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan. And today I'm joined by Jacqueline Francis. She's the co-founder and the executive director of the Global Warming Mitigation Project. And one of its signature programs is the Keeling Curve Prize that the organization gives out each year to 10 organizations that are out there making a difference. Delighted to have Jacqueline on the podcast today. Hey, Jackie, welcome to the podcast. It's great to see you.
Thank you, Ted. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so great. I was so lucky to meet you when I was in Aspen. What was that, a month or two ago? And Greg Poschman introduced us sort of on the fly. And then I found out about you and all you're doing with the Global Warming Mitigation Project, which is very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it was wonderful to meet you as well.
So are you sitting are you in Aspen right now, or are you in the valley right now, in God's country, as I like to call it?
I am in the mountains of Colorado, and it's a beautiful, beautiful day.
And you grew up there, right? So this is your home. And as I've described it to other people, you're living the dream. You found a way of going away to college, figuring out what you want to do in life, come back and carry on in that gorgeous part of the world.
Yeah, and it's a little bit thanks to our ability to work virtually right now even in the last 15 years, because I did grow up here in Aspen, Colorado, and it's an amazing place to call home, and I'm able to work with a team that's living around the world.
Right. So it sounds like you went off to Johns Hopkins University for your master's degree in energy policy and climate. And that's when you really came, am I right that that's when you really came up with this idea that you really wanted to find some way of elevating sort of climate leaders finding them and funding them, I think is in part of your literature.
I actually asked somebody if they could give me a job at the Aspen Institute, and they said, you can't get the job that you deserve without a master's. And so I said, all right, well, I'll go get a master's. And I did. And that was basically around 50 years old. And as I was getting the master's, I really figured out a way to be much more effective with my education and my connections and my skill set. And that's in the climate arena, which I think is incredibly important and probably the most challenging kind of 3D puzzle we have in our world these days. And I realized that that's where my energy and attention and kind of critical thinking would be the most effective and the most important.
Right. And this notion, I just found my notes. You had find, fund, and elevate, climate leaders and entrepreneurs all over the world. And so that was, you really honed in your graduate school program, saying, we got to find these leaders and give them resources so that they can scale their operations or their viewpoints, right?
Yeah. And a big part of the analysis that academia does is, the pathways to get there. And I was learning about how we have all these pathways and we really do know what the solutions are. And we just need to scale up, all the projects that are embarking on these amazing solutions throughout the world, and then put the funding there so that they can become the energy future technologies and the climate solutions that'll actually get us off greenhouse gases entirely or fossil fuels entirely, so that we can have an energy balance. And that just seemed very obvious to me as I was doing my studies, is we have the ways and we need to make them successful.
Yeah, absolutely. My viewpoint too, the solutions are there. It's just a matter of raising awareness. And then, as I think you said, scaling them up, right? And that often involves financing and all sorts of support. But so did the Global Warming Mitigation Project start with the prize, this Keeling Curve Prize?
Yes. The first thing I did was actually create the Keeling Curve Prize. And the Keeling Curve is based on the data set of CO2 in our atmosphere that's been precisely measured since 1958 in Mauna Loa. And now there are plenty of places all around the world that measure not just CO2, but greenhouse gases, as well as satellite data and, et cetera. So it's a science that's really evolved over the last 60 years. And the prize is kind of based on the symbolic representation of what CO2 is doing in the atmosphere, which has been going up since as soon as we measured it. And you know, it's the first project of the Keeling Curve Prize, which actually is the part where we find climate solutions around the world, and then we do a analysis with a analyst team that looks through all the applications and elevates the top, the best to the finalists in the top 20. And then the judging panel that actually judges and selects their top 10. So that was the first project of mine. And then that turned into a internship program. And we actually place interns with the finalists and the winners of the Keeling Curve Prize. And so that helps with career pathways as well as capacity building for the organizations that are trying to scale up. And then we created, sorry.
I just want to interrupt you and unpack some of this stuff. That was a lot you gave there. First off, Keeling, I was thinking, where did that come from? And of course I looked it up and he was that scientist, right? He's since passed away, but very few people know that name Keeling or where it came from. So that was one thing. And then I guess now in terms of atmospheric concentrations, parts per million CO2, I just looked this up today. We're at 424.75. And of course, Bill McKibben's organization was, 350.org saying, if we go over 350, we're in trouble. So these emissions have keep the importance of that Keeling curve is ever more important. But this notion of prizes and forming and creating a prize as a catalyst, I was thinking about, the Nobel Prize, and then there's the Earthshot Prize, and there's, I heard a resilience prize I'm not familiar with, but that whole, I think you maybe wrote that it's an often effective but overlooked tool to ignite progress, right? This notion of prizes, very cool.
I did a little study in my master's about, prizes versus grants. And, people, for some reason, just love to win a prize. And that's just part of human psychology. And the other thing about prizes that's interesting is that normally they don't come with strings attached, and ours does not. We actually give a cash prize, and then we do a lot of promotion, visibility, accolades. And that helps a lot when people are trying to bootstrap their organization, or they're really looking for what can help us. A prize not only gives them the motivation, it also creates excitement amongst the team. And the unrestricted funding can be so valuable because it just allows for you to pivot if you need to change where that money goes. And for most organizations, that's just, it's almost magic.
Yeah. Yeah. So and where does the prize money come from?
It's from mostly individual donors. We do have grants out there. It's a typical nonprofit where we do fundraising. It is not supported by one entity or a family foundation. It is done by our own internal fundraising. And we've been pretty successful and pretty lucky to get the prize money as well as money to expand and grow the organization.
Yeah, well, congratulations on that. And I think I've read that you have each year now you're giving away $500,000. You're giving $50,000 to 10 organizations. You've given away $1.75 million to date. But what amazed me was that you were suggesting that that's leveraged maybe over $1 billion worth of investment in all of those organizations. Is that right?
Yeah, I actually think it's closer to $2 billion. It's a little hard to estimate because we have a lot of organizations that are around the world, and some of them are nonprofits, which it's difficult to get the number of additional funding they've received since winning the prize. But through organizations like Crunchbase, I can look at the add-on investment that's gone into the for-profit space. And the for-profit space on our prize winners has been over $1.3 billion of add-on funding. And then we know of several organizations that have done really well in the nonprofit space as well. So it's become quite a catalyst, quite a launching pad for organizations.
And I guess now you've been doing this since, is it like 2017? Is that right? So maybe 7-8 years now. So the word is out there that that there is, like you said, it's not just the cash, but it's the support you're bringing. Because I guess the, what is it, the fellowship program? You describe the organization as having a fellowship program, and the fellowship, the fellows are awardees, have been awarded grants, and then they get this additional sort of organizational support. Is that right?
Yes, and part of the way I think is I always try to improve on what I'm doing, and I always try and kind of grow the impact of what I'm doing. And so when COVID hit and I saw a lot of young people not able to leave their home to go to the internships that they already had planned, I thought, hey, why don't I start an internship program that's virtual that can pair young people with these amazing climate projects and programs around the world, and they can work virtually. And so we started that during the first summer of COVID. And then it just stayed in place after COVID, where it was these virtual internships, which are actually really amazing for young people that don't have the ability to just like pack up and move somewhere for the summer. They have to stay around for their families or for any other reasons where they can't just move. And so this virtual internship has become just such a win-win between the people who are applying for the internship jobs, and then the organizations often really need more capacity. These young people have such wonderful knowledge and intellectual gifts that they can give to the organizations, and that's created just so much value through the climate solutions and action organizations that are in our database. So it's been a really wonderful like marriage of intelligence and solutions and capacity building. And we're just so proud of the program. And then this last semester, we had over 6,300 young people try and apply for the jobs in our system, and there were only about 58 jobs or something. So clearly it shows there's such a demand for young people to get into the climate careers of the future.
That's terrific. And you know, you can imagine some kid here in LA hooking up with your organization and all of a sudden supporting an organization somewhere in Africa, right? It could take somebody into a global dimension that they wouldn't otherwise have access to.
When I was coming back from the Conference of the Parties a couple years ago in Glasgow, I spent a couple days in Iceland, and I visited one of our Keeling Curve Prize laureates, one of our winners in Iceland, and they showed me around their facility, and they just gushed about the intern that had worked for them, that had actually created a dashboard and a database that they could use to explain to people what their product did and how the resources for it are around the world. And it was really neat to see that not only had they won the prize, but they actually were more impressed and pleased with the internship program because it took them to a whole nother level.
That's great. The database that you talk about, I want to talk about some of your impact studies because you got so many colorful stories, but like you said, I think you're developing a database of solutions. And I don't know how they're organized. I'm curious to know about how they're organized, but how many projects are up on your database at this point?
Well, so we call it the Climate Impact Conduit or the Conduit for short. And it has about 1,160 projects in it right now, but we're about to add 500 more because our 2024 application period has closed and gone through the analysis phase. We'll be announcing our 2024 finalists in San Francisco on April 25th during San Francisco Climate Week. And now that we're at this part in our sort of annual progress is when we have the new applications that have come through can now be added to our database. So we're about to add 500 more new applications. So we'll be close to 1,700 projects and programs in the database. And it's really cool because they're searchable in several different ways. You can search like geographically, you can look at sort of the category that they're in, or you know, the size of the organization. There's several different ways that you can filter and search for what you're looking for. And then you can look at their profile, and you know, you can do all kinds of like searching around in our database and try and figure out what kind of climate solutions you want to support.
Right. Now those 1,700, I think you said that they've already been vetted or they've been screened, right? So all sorts of groups come through into your conduit saying here's a project to be looked at, not necessarily seeking an award, I guess. They just want to submit their project for the database?
No, they all want to win the Keeling Curve Prize.
Oh, they all want the prize. And if they're legit, you have a group that analyzes it. And if they're legit, then they become a bona fide project in your database.
Yes. So they apply for the prize. I have a team of 12 analysts that work for me that live around the world, and they all have either a master's or a PhD in some kind of climate discipline. Most of them have pretty amazing jobs, like Ruth is at Conservation International, Avon's at the Department of Energy, Astrid is at the Green Climate Fund. So these are all really amazing people who do the analysis for me. And then those projects get into our database as part of this conduit database. And we do have the projects update them themselves. So it's okay. Similar to Wikipedia, where a project updates their own profile. Yeah. And hopefully in time, it'll become more and more just relevant and robust and usable and interesting.
Right. Do some of them give their contact information and some don't? I mean, some don't want to have an onslaught of people asking this and that, but others do because they do want to see their own success replicated?
Yeah, and we do have all the contact information at the back of the house. So we do have the ability to connect people, you know, if there's somebody that's interested in, you know, investing in some kind of organization and they want to actually connect through us, we can make that happen as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the organizations that you have supported. Some of your, I guess you call them the impact studies. What are the sort of the top? Let's go through two or three of these.
Any particular category you want to talk about? I mean,
I'm an energy wonk. I'm on the energy side of life, but that could take a lot of dimensions. I'm very excited about rural electrification in the developing world, for example, and doing it in carbon-free ways. But what are your pet projects out?
So I have one that I love. Jeff is at Jaza Energy, and they applied early on in their development. And Jaza is in Africa, and they do solar hubs. And so they have these like these yurts that they, you know, put solar on top of, and they become like a kind of a community gathering center where people come from all over the place and they plug in all their equipment and they charge everything up and they talk with each other. And then they go home and they have their solar lights and their computers charged and their phones charged. And this is called Jaza Energy. And when Jeff heard about winning the Keeling Curve Prize, and I think it was either our first or second year, he was in the middle of Africa and he had like almost zero connectivity. I think he had his phone, and he said he was just so thrilled to win this prize. And now they have projects all over Africa, and he actually bought a oil and gas company in Nigeria to turn it into like a renewable energy solar company. And he's got this just amazing vision of completely redefining what energy is like in the world.
That is incredible. So let me see if I understand this concept. He creates a hut where he might put some solar panels on and have some batteries, and then people can come and charge their phones.
Yes, and everything else, all their equipment. And these are, he's put in these solar hubs like all over
Africa.
Solar
hubs, right. And then do people pay then to charge whatever they want? Is there a revenue source there, or?
I believe it's kind of like a community, like a membership.
Right. Wow. But now he's not going to run this oil and gas refinery. He's going to convert that to biofuels or something?
I believe he's trying to convert it into some kind of a, you know, renewable energy facility. So big plans.
Yeah, really great. Okay, another one.
Okay.
How about something domestic? How about something in the United States?
Well, one of my favorites is about sustainable aviation fuel. And I know that that might be something that's kind of controversial for people, but that's my biggest carbon impact is the flying I do, which, you know, I try and cut back, but it's a part of, you know, my job and our lives. And so a sustainable aviation fuel company, they also do all kinds of carbon products. They're called a carbon recycling company. They use waste to energy technology and create products like fibers for clothing, like that Lululemon uses or H&M, and they create sustainable aviation fuel. Mm-hmm. And they use either like woody biomass or municipal waste. And they have a proprietary system where they can turn that waste material into, I believe it's ethylene, and then turn that into jet fuel. And so I find that to be wonderful because I really feel like the idea of waste to energy is something that we all could really benefit from in this world. And Jennifer, who's the CEO, talks about how we have plenty of carbon on top of the planet. We have all the carbon we need for our energy systems. So let's use the carbon we have on top of our planet and not drill for it and dig for it and then burn it to put it up in the atmosphere.
So when she says we have all the carbon we need on top of the planet, is that basically that's not all in waste at this point?
No, not all. It's not all in waste. I mean, there's plenty of carbon solutions that are using, you know, different types of utilization of carbon sources, which is something that we've actually seen in humanity for, you know, 10,000 years, if not more, where we've had a carbon balance on the planet where all the carbon that is burned gets absorbed through, you know, natural processes.
Right, right. Interesting. Next project.
You know, I love some of the infrastructure projects going on. There's one that was a finalist last year that's about... it's called It's Electric, and it's about creating plug-in systems for apartment buildings and for shared housing places where you can actually access the ability to, you know, plug your electric car in. And I just think that that's something that's overlooked. Like, it's a simple solution, but it's overlooked. And there's a lot of things like that that are apps that actually help with behavior change and kind of show you how you can be more efficient in your everyday life or your food systems and how food can be like a circular economy system. We're seeing a lot more solutions that are about agriculture and how changing the ways that we do our rotation of crops and our rotation of, you know, the livestock can be so much more environmentally conscious and climate conscious. Mm-hmm. So that's not really specific. It's more of a generalization. I have a specific interesting one about the weathering of ocean rock that like limestone and olivine that can create a faster ability for the carbon to be absorbed. And mm-hmm. then that carbon actually becomes sequestered within like the natural weathering system. And that's
how are you supporting that? How are you supporting that?
We had a winner last year that is doing a, olivine weathering, rock weathering system that won the prize.
Gosh, how great. So how do you organize, how is the database organized? I mean, is there some simple breakdown? How do you do that?
So it's a list on our website. You go to, you know, gwmp.org and you can go to our database, which is called, like I said, the Climate Impact Conduit. And it's really like a list, but there are several ways you can filter the list mm-hmm. at the mm-hmm. top. So you just kind of click what you want to filter by, you know, whether it's regionally or, you know, by category or something like that. And then you just apply all and it'll come up with the list. And then you can click on each each one of the things that come up, and their profile comes up. And it's the profile that they gave us through the Keeling Curve Prize application. And then, you know, you can actually read about what they do, where they are, how many employees they have, basically, you know, within a range. And it's a pretty simple but effective way of looking for climate solutions around the world.
Yeah, and anybody can log on to this.
Absolutely.
There's no cost. What's next with your organization?
So besides having the finalist announcement coming up in San Francisco, we're planning to announce our winners at the Sun Valley Forum in Sun Valley on the July 15th. And then we have a laureate celebration for anybody to come join us in New York during New York Climate Week. So besides the events that we're doing and running the programs and keeping everything going with them, I'm also creating something within the database that's called Carbon Abatement Portfolios. And this is an idea that comes from the voluntary carbon markets and how corporations and family offices and sometimes even individuals are looking to actually and realistically offset their carbon emissions. And I'm creating a carbon abatement bucket of solutions that actually disperses risk so that if certain projects don't work out, there's more than 100 in the portfolio. And it's similar to like an ETF in investments. You're actually abating your carbon through a more of a, a system that puts the carbon abatement into many projects rather than just a few. And this is something that we can do because of
the diversity
of our database.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you're creating a family, you're creating an incredibly powerful network. And I love this carbon abatement portfolio, this fund. Now, do people pay, is it a dollar per metric ton avoided, or do the prices vary on what kind of abatement that you're funding?
We are going to try and figure out those things before we actually roll it out, as far as like how do the projects get their share of the funding, and then how does it get priced? Because as you know, the price of carbon varies greatly. And we are going to try and figure out how to price it in a way where, you know, it makes sense and it's realistic and it's actually going to get the job of reducing emissions done. So these are this is the process we're in, and I hope to roll out the carbon abatement portfolios, before the end of the year.
That's great stuff. So now, what's it like? I mean, there's a lot of people listening that can't imagine living the good life up in Aspen. I'm going to just sort of query you on some of these, sort of personal things. How many days of skiing did you get in this year, Jackie? I know your type. I know you're probably over 40. Come on.
Well, I was going to say define a day, because sometimes a day means I go up for an hour and meet a friend for like a meeting.
Let's call that a day. That's a day. That's a day. That's a day on the slopes, as far as I'm concerned. So how many days if we use that metric?
I think I'm right around 45.
That's great. That's great. And is skiing just something that you just don't get tired of it? It's in your blood, it's in your whole psyche. What is it?
Yeah, so we moved to Aspen. My family moved to Aspen when I was a little over 6 years old. And I've been skiing since then. I did a little racing when I was in my 20s, and it's the feel of the wind in your face, and it never gets boring. It never gets too easy, and I just think of it like, I don't know, a breath of fresh air in my day.
Just a big part. Yeah, it's well put, and a big part of your life. And then what do you do when there's no snow on the ground?
I love to put music on in my AirPods and go walking in the mountains. I love to just like be outside. I try and enjoy nature as much as possible. It's a wonderful place to be. I also just like to do the other kinds of like go hit a golf ball or go play paddle ball or something like that. Pickleball.
Oh, that's great stuff. Well, you know, keep all those activities going and being refreshed by them, because we need you in the global warming mitigation project in a big way. I love your vision. I love what you're doing. Thanks for doing it.
Thank you so much for having me, Ted.
Great talking to you today. That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.